Namo Jayong Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Ashtottar Shatoshi Shrimad Abhay Charanarvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jayong Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Ashtottar Shatoshi Shrimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai नामचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की जय श्री श्री राधा दामोदर की जय श्री श्री गौर निताई की जय समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय जगद्गुरु श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Vishatarine Srila Prabhupada Ki Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Hare Krishna. So how is everybody this morning? What happened? You're so ecstatic that you can't even speak. There is a state of being speechless in ecstasy. Anyway, it's a beautiful day today. And I'm very happy to be with you all again. This morning I took it little easy. I had been kind of feeling a little jet-lagged. And so, how you all are enjoying and appreciating this retreat? Thank you very much. So, this is a session when we are going to discuss about Srila Prabhupada's position as founder Acharya of ISKCON. Everybody knows that Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, but we are trying to understand the purpose and the need of that. Not only the title, it's not only the title, it's a position. That's what we actually going to discuss. We had been discussing about this topic since many, many years. I remember in 1993, the GBC actually passed a resolution that Prabhupada is the No, 1993 the proposal came up in the GBC meeting and approved officially that Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya of ISKCON. And what Prabhupada wanted, that wherever the name would come, ISKCON, Prabhupada's name should be there under that, as the founder Acharya. Also, we considered that Prabhupada's other wishes pertaining to this title, Founder Acharya. Then, I think in 1998 or 99, it was a resolution was passed that Srila Prabhupada, as the Founder Acharya, will be seen as, will be recognized or be the Acharya, the Guru, the Shiksha Guru, the preeminent Shiksha Guru of all the devotees of ISKCON for all time. Now, I'm sorry, this was in 1997. that Prabhupada will be the Prabhupada is the guru, the shiksha guru of all devotees of ISKCON for all. And then in 1999 we actually passed a resolution that anyone who accepts Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya and the GBC body as the ultimate managing authority, irrespective of his background, like if he is coming from some other sampradaya or if he is initiated by some guru outside of ISKCON, can become a member of ISKCON. The criteria for becoming a member of ISKCON is simply two factors. Accepting Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya, and which means preeminent shiksha guru, accepting Prabhupada as the founder acharya and as the preeminent shiksha guru, and the GBC as the ultimate managing authority. That means we are going to abide by the dictates of the GBC or the decisions of the GBC, directions of the GBC. Then, even though we may be initiated by somebody else outside of ISKCON, we can become a member of ISKCON. Not that we have to take re-initiation in ISKCON again, no. Anybody can join ISKCON. So this is how, over a period of time, Prabhupada's position has been more and more emphatically established in ISKCON. And then in 2006, the Strategic Planning Committee had their first meeting in Italy, in Prabhupadesh, Padova. And there, some committees pertaining to this strategic planning were formed. And one of the committees was Srila Prabhupada's position committee. And since then, twice a year we had been meeting. The GBC meets twice a year nowadays, once in March, and once in February, March, once in October. Twice we meet. And in these GBC meeting, in the Strategic Planning Committee, we extensively discuss about Prabhupada's position, how to establish, how to confirm, how to properly make the devotees understand Prabhupada's very important position as the founder acharya. And then, as Rabindra Swarup Prabhu mentioned yesterday, about 4 years back, while we were discussing about that, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was asked to give a kind of written way, write down our concepts that we developed through all these meetings. And accordingly, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu came up with this, just four pages of writing. He mentioned that he was actually thinking very deeply at night about that. And then he got up and he typed out what came to his mind about Srila Prabhupada's position, the understandings that we developed through extensive discussions for so many years. And I think every senior devotee of ISKCON had been thinking about this point quite seriously. And so Rabindra Swarup Prabhu actually came up with this, just 3-4 pages of simple points, like the understanding of what it actually means in the life of a devotee of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's position. And then he presented it to the meeting. And naturally, we very much appreciated what he presented, but he asked him to elaborate on that. Like, these were like bullet points, and these bullet points needed to have. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu started to work on that. Yesterday you heard what an extensive and in-depth research he had made. He read the harmonies for so many, all these harmonies copies, and went to reading early books of Gaudiya Math, and also the history that came out. And so he elaborated on those points, and that final, and it took him 3 years. And finally, this year, we came out with this book. And so we actually want to distribute these books extensively to make the devotees understand what Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder acharya actually means. And it is, we already printed 25,000 copies, and we are going to give a second run. We ran out of this 25,000 copies that we printed. We are going to give another run of 25,000 copies. And we have been distributing. For America, I got 5,000 copies. And I think 3,000 copies already went out. And anyway, and also it is available, this book is available also in the internet. As the internet, the soft copy is available in the internet. And and we want this understanding to prevail in ISKCON in a proper way. And that is why we decided to have this seminar. We also, GBC also requested the senior devotees to speak extensively on this topic wherever they go. And just before coming to America, I was in Europe. We had a retreat in Spain, and this seminar was very well received. Very well received. Devotees from all over Europe came. And so so here we are discussing to make you all understand what it actually means, what Prabhupada's position as the founder acharya means in the context of ISKCON. In the context of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. It's not just ISKCON. It is needed for the entire Sankirtan movement. His Grace Ravindra Swarup Prabhu ki. Yeah. Mancha kalpataru bhashya kripa sindhu bhaya patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo. So how did you all like Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's presentation yesterday? And how did you benefit from that presentation? Wasn't it? Yes. Go ahead. Yeah. Actually, personally, I feel that Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was the most appropriate person to make this presentation in the form of this book. And this book is now going to be there as long as ISKCON is going to be there. And it's one of the most important position paper of the GPC, as far as I'm concerned. So, while we are discussing, sometimes I notice that I have to bring out some, I have to mention something that happened in the Gaudiya Math, something that happened in ISKCON, and like, mind you, those mentions, those descriptions are not really meant to find fault with anybody or criticize anyone. It is simply for educating ourselves. I remember Prabhupada once mentioned that to make mistakes is not bad, but not to learn from a mistake is bad. Yes, mistakes will be made. Mistakes will be made, but from the mistakes we have to learn. And that is how we move forward in a proper direction, in a proper way. So, what are we doing actually? Well, who are we? We are members of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, came in this age of Kali to establish the Yuga Dharma, which is a very, very difficult business, because this is the age, Kali Yuga is the age of Adharma. Another name of Kali is Adharma Bandhu. Adharma Bandhu. He is a Bandhu, he is a friend of Adharma. And Kali's business is to establish Adharma on the throne of this planet. That is Kali's business. And Kali's associates, his principal associates, are sin personified. Now, who is Kali's main support? Sin. And who are Kali's important colleagues or compatriots? Lust, greed, anger, illusion, pride and envy. The six enemies of our spiritual progress are the main accomplices of Kali. And Kali himself is identified as quarrel personified. Kali's description is Karala Vadana Krudha Kalishcha Kalahapriya. His face is very frightening, very vicious and cruel. Karala Vadana. And his nature is very, very cruel. And he is very fond of quarrel. He spreads his influence through quarrel. And his business is to establish Adharma. And what is the symptom that Adharma is being established? Adharma is waning. What is the sign of Adharma's spreading his influence? The sign of Adharma's spreading of influence is meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. And today in this world we can see what's happening, how these four activities are becoming so prevalent. So that is a clear indication that Adharma is being established throughout by the influence of Kali. Mind you, when Kali came, when Parikshit Maharaj was ruling, Parikshit Maharaj gave Kali these four places, knowing that these are the places of sin, sinful activities. And Kali couldn't find any place where these activities were going on. Mind you, 5,000 years ago, these activities were totally absent from this planet. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex and no gambling. That's why Kali begged Parikshit Maharaj, in your kingdom I don't see such a place where these activities go on. Give me some place where at least I can reside. Then he said, okay, gold. Indicating where gold is not used in Krishna's service, that can be the place of Kali. So Kali got these five places. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's business is to establish dharma, yuga dharma. Can you imagine how difficult it is? It's going to be an extremely difficult task. But at the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So wherever he is and whoever follows him, for them, victory is guaranteed. Just like the Battle of Kurukshetra, it appeared to be impossible for the Pandavas to win that battle. It was impossible for them to win the battle. That's why Duryodhana was so convinced that he declared that without war he is not going to give a piece of land the size of the tip of a needle to the Pandavas. Because he was confident that he is going to win the battle. And eventually what do we see? We take it for granted, oh, Krishna was there, so he won the battle. After the battle was over and the battle was won, and then we see, yes, the battle was won. But when the battle was going on or before the battle, it was very difficult to decide which party is going to win. And it was impossible for the Pandavas to win that battle. But eventually we see they won. Why did they win? Jatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Jatra Partha Dhanurdhara. Wherever Yogeshwar Krishna or Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to be there, and wherever his devotees like Arjun or Prabhupada will be there, victory is guaranteed. It will happen. There cannot be any doubt that Krishna consciousness movement will not spread all over the world. We should not have the slightest doubt, a shadow of doubt in our mind that Mahaprabhu's prediction will not come true. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to establish dharma. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati. That's the purpose of his coming to this material nature. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to fulfill that purpose. And we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came at a time when adharma became quite prevalent on this planet. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inundated the whole of India with his Krishna consciousness movement. But then we see over a period of time, so within about 250 years, Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement was about 250 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was practically lost. It was totally eclipsed by the upper sampradayas. Nobody could find Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. All they found is the activities of this upper sampradayas that was going on in the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like Aul, Baul, Lara, Leri, Sai, Saradiya, Sakhi Bhakti, Churadhari, Govnagari, etc. And some of their activities were like, in simple words, some of their activities were based on meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. So you can well imagine the state of affairs. Like what was going on in the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had nothing to do with Mahaprabhu's teaching. That's why Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur were so emphatic about these four principles. And Prabhupada eventually. No meat eating. If you want to join ISKCON, no meat eating. Not even onions and garlics. In India, even in India, even among the Vaishnav Sampradayas, like onions, garlic maybe, but onions is not really considered to be so bad. I'm not talking about the pure Vaishnav thing, the pure Vaishnav individuals, but the Vaishnavas, so-called Vaishnavas, those who are practicing, and Vaishnavism in a way, they, onions and garlics is not considered to be non-veg. Some places even they think that taking chapatis and ekadasi is alright. Because it's not full grain, it's broken grain, pulverized grain. So this is how the standard has degenerated over a period of time. And intoxication, Prabhupada, if you go to India, you'll find the sadhus drink tea, coffee, no problem. So often you go to meet people and they ask, Swamiji, some coffee, some tea. And we have to tell them that we don't take tea or coffee. So, this is the standard that Srila Prabhupada so emphatically established. Why? Because the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement is founded on the principles of Dharma. And these are the pillars of Dharma on which Dharma is standing. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings were completely eclipsed by these upper sampradayas, upper siddhantas. So much so that when Bhakti Vinod Thakur came, he decided to promote Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He was looking for a Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in entire Bengal, he couldn't find a single copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can see the state of affairs from that single incident. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was completely forgotten. There was no trace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And eventually Bhakti Vinod Thakur found one copy, handwritten copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Odisha, not in Bengal. And he took that copy, gave his Amrita Pravaha Bhashya, his commentary, which literally means the flow of nectar. The commentary, that's the flow of nectar. He presented that and he printed and he started to distribute and teach on the basis of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then he printed Chaitanya Bhagavad and other books. And he wrote extensively. And he was such a brilliant personality. Such a brilliant personality. He not only presented Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching in writing, but he presented Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in the most beautiful poetry. And not only he wrote in poetry in Bengali, which was his mother tongue, but he wrote poetry in Sanskrit. Jadite Haripada Saroj Sudham রসপান পরম হৃদয়ং সততম পরিহিত গৃহম কলিভাবময়ম ভজ গোদ্রুম কানন কুঞ্জ বিথুন। Such a beautiful poetry. Not only he wrote in English and in Bengali and in Sanskrit, he also wrote in English. And his English poetries are so brilliant, maintaining such beautiful order of meter and rhyme. Not many English poets actually so strictly followed or adhered to the concept of meter and rhyme. Famous for them is actually Coleridge. He is famous for his meter and rhyme. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poem is so brilliant. Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts forever employ. See the meter and rhyme? The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slips of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Such beautiful, I mean, such a brilliant personality. And he started to promote, he actually started to revive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So if we look at the history, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and the whole of India was inundated with Krishna consciousness. Actually, not only the whole of India got affected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, the whole world actually became affected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. In Europe at that time, they saw the Renaissance. England saw the Golden Age through Queen Elizabeth I. And Shakespeare is quite contemporary to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Columbus just discovered America. Like, all kinds of wonderful things are happening around that time, all over the world. But India was... That was a golden age for India in its spiritual context. But then, gradually, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, things continued. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu was preaching. The Goswamis were in Vrindavan writing the books and establishing Krishna consciousness. Then three stalwart acharyas did an amazing preaching, especially in the eastern part of India. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Prabhu. And after that, there were other acharyas like Ganga Narayan Chakravarti and their followers, Rashikananda Thakur. They were preaching. But gradually, Mahaprabhu's teachings got lost. So much so that it was practically absent from the surface of this planet. Only some remote corners of Vrindavan and Navadvip, some Bhajanandi Vaishnavas were retaining Mahaprabhu's pristine teachings. Like Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Baladev Vidyabhushan. Baladev Vidyabhushan also did something, you know, at that time also they were preaching. Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was recognized as the crest jewel of the Vaishnav community in Vrindavan at that time. And the king of Jaipur had some problem with the Ramanandis about worshipping Govindadev. And so he wrote a letter to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to come and settle that problem. And he couldn't go because he was too old. But Baladev Vidyabhushan decided to go with his permission. He went and he defeated them and with his Govinda Bhashi. So, I mean, these personalities were preaching, but that overall influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement was practically non-existent there. And then came Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and he started to revive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was, I mean, he faced a lot of difficulties because people didn't want to, especially educated, intelligent class of Bengal, as Ravindra Swarup Prabhu identified them yesterday, the Bhadralokas of Bengal, the gentlemen of Bengal, Babus of Bengal. They were not at all inclined to accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually started to let everybody know what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings actually meant. But he himself couldn't do very much. He wrote extensively, he influenced his immediate surrounding quite effectively. He even built a temple at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. As you all know, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, although he was a very high-ranking government officer at that time in the British India, but he went door-to-door begging, took 1 rupee per from each one to build the temple. He didn't want to take a big amount of money from one person. He wanted to involve everybody, or as many people as possible, in this construction of the temple. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur himself couldn't do very much. He gave the objective and mission in writing. He gave the blueprint of the Sankirtan movement in the form of Naam Art. The presentation of that, how this movement would be established, he gave the blueprint. It's a marketplace of a holy name. Holy name you have to buy. You can't get it free. Nothing goes free in this world. You have to buy. And in order to buy the holy name, you have to pay a very special price. What is the price? Shraddha mulle bikaina. The price is Shraddha. Faith. Implicit faith. Implicit respect. Recognizing that this holy name is not different from Krishna. That is the faith. Or another description of Shraddha is Shraddha shabde vishwas kahe shudhrira nishchay krishne bhakti koile sarva karma krito hoy. Shraddha is that implicit faith, shudhrira nishchay, the firm, very firm faith that if I render devotional service to Krishna, then everything will be done, everything will be accomplished. I don't have to do anything else, just serve Krishna. Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy. All activities are performed.
I think that's Mahaprabhu's own definition, right?
Yeah, right, right, yeah. Yeah. So this is how Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur established the institution for spreading Krishna consciousness. Naam Hat, marketplace. And mind you, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur did not make himself the leader of the marketplace. The Mahajan, the sole selling agent, the producer of the goods, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You produce something, then you give the sole selling agency for distribution. So who is the soul-selling agent of this commodity? The holy name? Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Mahajan. Mahajan. Mahajan means a big businessman. And so Nityananda Prabhu is the Mahajan, the soul-selling agent. And then he has sub-agents and all so forth, and shopkeepers, small traders. But they all are functioning in this marketplace. And what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's role in that marketplace? He kept himself as a sweeper of the marketplace to keep the marketplace clean. And we can understand why he assumed that role, because so much dirt was there already created by the Apasampradayas that it needed a very expert sweeper or cleaner. So he assumed the role to clean all the garbage that has been created by this Apasampradayas. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur naturally saw the dimension of this, the massive magnitude of this mission. He himself couldn't do very much, being a government officer and quite elderly by the time. To create something, to organize something, it's going to take time and energy. So he prayed to Lord Jagannath to send an able assistant. And as a result of his prayers, who did Lord Jagannath send him? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bimala Prasad. Bimala Prasad, that was his name. He received him as a prasad, as a mercy of Lord Jagannath. But not, he didn't identify him as Jagannath's prasad. There is a history behind that also. Jagannath's prasad, right after offering from Jagannath, it goes to Bimala Devi. Bimala Devi is Mahamaya, another form of Mahamaya. And there is a story behind that, anecdote behind that. One day, Narad Muni went to Vaikuntha and he got a little remnant from Narayan. So he took that and he became ecstatic. So Lord Shiva saw him and asked him, "Hey Narad, what happened to you? How come you are so ecstatic?" And Narad Muni told him that, "I went to Vaikuntha and I got some remnants of the Lord. And you know, once I took that, you know, this is what happened. I can't control myself." So Shiva said, "Oh, you got some Mahaprasad from Narayan. Please give me some." So Narada said, "Look, I got only very little, so there was nothing that I could keep." So Lord Shiva was very upset. "What kind of brother you are? You didn't save any prasad for me." So so then Narada saw that in between his nails, the little bit of a grain is just sticking there. So he said, "Look, there's something sticking here." So Lord Shiva took that and he became ecstatic. He started to dance. Parvati, seeing him in that way, singing and dancing, asked him, "What happened to you today?" So Lord Shiva told her what happened. Then Parvati said, "You didn't save any for me." So Lord Shiva reasoned with her that, "Look, I had only a small little grain that was sticking in his fingernail." And so Parvati then became so upset, she just sat down in performing great austerity to receive Lord's Mahaprasad. Then the Lord appeared to her and asked Parvati, "Parvati, what happened?
why are you performing such severe austerity? So she told the whole story that he had been deprived of Mahaprasad. So then Lord said, okay, now from now on, all my prasad, all my remnants will first go to you. And that is why another name of Mahamaya is Annapurna. She is full of Anna. All the Annas, all the foodstuffs are being distributed to the living entities by her. So in in Jagannath temple, Jagannath's prasad goes to Bimala Devi. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur named Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as Bimala Prasad. And he was an exceptionally brilliant personality. Naturally, was brilliant being born and brought up as a son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he was exceptionally brilliant personality. And he took up the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over India, or revive Krishna consciousness. And he did such an excellent job. It is actually within the short span, he started to preach. He came to Calcutta in 1919. Say from 1920, he started to preach. And he preached till about 1935. And within these 15 years, he spread Krishna consciousness movement all over India, establishing 63 temples. He established 64 temples. The 64th temple was in Burma, what is today's Myanmar. So he established 64 temples. So you can well imagine how vibrant his movement was at that time. And not only he established 63 temples in India, but he attracted the most brilliant personalities.
Sorry, you just had a delivery truck, electric cars blocking it for the gas delivery. A New Jersey van, I think ZEF7UZ, and a Virginia blue car, XBG7438. You have those, please move them. And blocking right away. Anybody? Yeah?
Now you're in trouble. Like, it's not here, yeah? The owners of the cars, they're not... Okay. Huh? They're there.
What's here?
Did you get the numbers? Or Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki. So your announcement is done? Or yes. Now you have to go and find out?
Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, started to spread Krishna consciousness most effectively throughout India. And he did it in a short span of 15 years. And it was a remarkable achievement. The kind of people that he attracted were extremely remarkable. Very, very brilliant personalities, and spread his influence so much so that the governor of Bengal at that time came to Mayapur to attend his function. I mean, what kind of influence? One very high ranking. Yeah, right. Very high ranking government officer. English, British, Englishman. Right, the opening of Jagopeeth. And to get an Englishman, topmost government officer at that time in Calcutta to come all the way to Navadvip and Mayapur. Mayapur, even now, Mayapur is such a tedious journey. And those days to go there. So how effectively he was spreading Krishna consciousness at that time. And his mission, as Ravindra Sarup Prabhu pointed out quite elaborately yesterday also, that his mission actually was to take it out of India. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, as early as in 1894, he wrote that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village. Can you imagine making a prediction like that in 1884 when India was a British colony? Nobody gave any recognition to India at that time. India practically was a slave of the English. At that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur boldly writes, and not only he writes, he sends his books to different universities. Some of our godbrothers found that the life and precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Bhagavat, these two books written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the McGill University in Canada. So the books were sent to different universities for scholars to reach, their scholars to read. And so this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision and objective was to now fulfill the prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Take this prediction, to fulfill that prediction by taking the movement out of India and establishing it all over the world. He wrote that will happen as early as in 1894. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started his preaching, you can well imagine, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went to Calcutta and started to preach from 1920. 1922 he meets Srila Prabhupada. And what did he tell Prabhupada that is at the first meeting? Preach these teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through English language all over the world. I mean, his mission didn't even start practically. He is just in a small little rented place in Ultodanga Main Road in Calcutta, in North Calcutta. And he is giving some discourse to people, to some people that were coming. Prabhupada's friend, Naren Malik, met him and became very impressed. And so Naren Malik went and told Srila Prabhupada that I met such a sadhu. So please, will you come and meet him? Initially, Prabhupada was reluctant to meet him because Prabhupada developed some sort of, aversion to these so-called sadhus, because he saw how these sadhus were exploiting his father. They're not sadhus, they're coming to their house to just eat and sleep. So he said, I have seen many sadhus, I don't want to see any more sadhus. But Naren Malik told him, no, this is a different type of sadhu. So he went to meet him, and before Prabhupada could even sit down, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just gives him that command. That Prabhupada actually took it up as his life's mission. He didn't take it up as his life mission, or he didn't accept it straight away. Prabhupada argued with him initially, because Prabhupada at that time was very much influenced by Gandhi's non-violent movement for India's freedom. And he told him that first India has to become free before people take India's message seriously. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, no, Mahaprabhu's teaching is not limited to any geographical and political boundary. Mahaprabhu's message is coming from another world. And it is meant for all, for the deliverance of all. And from that very first meeting, Srila Prabhupada was so impressed that he took it up as his life's mission. And you know what Prabhupada did right after that? How many of you know? Prabhupada at that time was a manager of a pharmaceutical company called Dr. Bose's Laboratory. He was a 26-year-old young man, has a very nice job as a manager of a pharmaceutical company. He had a family, he had a wife and a son. But next thing Prabhupada does, he goes and submits his resignation. He resigned from his job. And Dr. Bose, who was actually his father's friend and treated Prabhupada like his own son, he asked him, "Why are you resigning all of a sudden? What happened?" So Prabhupada told him what happened, and then he said, "Well, you can still serve his mission and serve his purpose by spreading whatever he's asking you to do, maintaining your job." But Prabhupada's response to that was, "No, when I am employed by you, then my time is sold out to you. I don't have any more free time to do this." So he asked, "Then how do you want to maintain your family?" Prabhupada said, "I'll start my business. That way I'll have my free time and I can maintain myself." So when Dr. Bose completely failed to convince Prabhupada to continue in his company, then he proposed that you become the sole selling agent of my product in North India. And then that Prabhupada accepted. And he moved to Allahabad to distribute his medicine products. So this is how Srila Prabhupada made Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And from that we can see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur effectively spread Krishna consciousness all over India, but worldwide mission didn't start as yet. As Ravindra Prabhu mentioned yesterday, he even sponsored some of his disciples to go to the West, go to England and Europe. He paid for their passage. He sponsored their accommodation and activities there. So that is how keen he was to start the preacher worldwide mission. Although it didn't happen properly during his time, but he planted the seed in the heart of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada took up that mission. He resigned from his job in 1922. And from then onwards, it was a big struggle. Prabhupada wanted to start his business, do his business and make money. I had the good fortune of hearing it straight from Srila Prabhupada himself. There was one doctor called Dr. Bimalananda Tarkatirtha who came to treat Srila Prabhupada. He was an old acquaintance of Srila Prabhupada, very well-known person in Calcutta. And he came to treat Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur. So one evening, after he treated Srila Prabhupada, they were sitting together and Prabhupada was talking about what he did and how it all happened. And Prabhupada was mentioning that he thought that by running his business, he will make money, and with that money he will go to the West and he will start preaching in the West. But he said that he was not successful in his business. And he also mentioned that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once told him, when he asked him how his business was doing, and when he told him that it was not going very well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, It's not surprising. Because to be successful in business, you have to love money. But you don't love money enough. And Prabhupada admitted that he was running his business, but his heart was not in his business. His heart was in preaching. And that's why he was not really so successful in his business. And then eventually Prabhupada also mentioned that all this while he was trying to make money, go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness. He didn't succeed. But finally, when he goes to the West, he goes as a pauper, as a penniless person. And everything started to happen. He didn't have to make arrangements for money or other resources. It all happened. He simply came to America and things just happened, started to happen. And Prabhupada, at that time, he said that from that I could learn something like that. Prabhupada said that when you are serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you do not have to worry about money. So he made all the arrangements. And we have seen. Actually, once when I was in Bombay with Srila Prabhupada, I was sitting, Prabhupada was sitting on the balcony of his quarters on the sixth floor, and I was sitting at his feet facing the temple. And sometimes Prabhupada would just start speaking, and Prabhupada just mentioned, "I am the richest man in this world." And then he kept on saying why he is the richest man. Like, so many people, so many devotees, so much assets. And like, so this is how Prabhupada himself admitted that about the magnitude of his success in spreading Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada continued the mission. Now here, this is the point, actually is a very interesting aspect of it. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he started to spread Krishna consciousness, he established an institution. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gave the blueprint of an institution in the form of this concept of Namhat. Namhat is a structure where the holy name will be available, and where in the marketplace we can do the trading, give and take. Those who want to get it, they can come here, and those who want to distribute it, they can distribute it from here. It is not just a one-man show. It is a collective endeavor of an institution. Although he could not establish that institution, but Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established that institution, and he put the maximum emphasis on that institution. So much so that before leaving the planet, he told his followers, his leading disciples, to continue the mission collectively through a governing body, a collective concept of management. And he did not mention anything about how the initiation will continue. Who will become the next guru? No such mention. He didn't say a single word about that. All he said is, maintain the mission collectively. But unfortunately, his leading disciples couldn't really understand the purport of this mission, of this instruction. Like, I had the good fortune of hearing it from some of Prabhupada's godbrothers who were involved in that. And they admitted, I mean, that godbrother of Srila Prabhupada admitted that they did not know at that time how a spiritual organization can run by a group of managers. They felt that a spiritual institution needs a spiritual head. And they decided to appoint a spiritual head. As Ramaswami Prabhu mentioned yesterday, there were two groups. One group wanted to follow this concept of management in a sort of collective way, but one person wanted to be the head. So that is also another problem. They were actually thinking of, now Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is gone, now we have to become the head, or one has to become the head. But the person who was appointed as the Acharya, unfortunately, he fell down. And Prabhupada mentioned that initially they appointed one Acharya, and then they all wanted to become Acharyas. And as a result of that, the institution collapsed. And when because the institution collapsed, we see that the preaching also came to a grinding halt. Preaching stopped. And Prabhupada told us quite emphatically that don't make the same mistake that my godbrothers made after Guru Maharaj's disappearance. And what is that mistake? The mistake is that he wanted them to collectively continue the preaching mission, but they didn't do that. They just wanted to become acharyas. And they wanted to become the big leaders. And as a result of that, the institution collapsed and preaching stopped. And very fortunately, in ISKCON, we can see that, yes, from the mistakes of Gauriya Math, we learned what to do and what not to do. And that is that the need for collective management through an institution. Like if we look at the history of Gauriya Math, then we'll see that most of these leading disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur maintained their spiritual life quite impeccably. They maintained their sannyasis quite strict in their sannyas ashram. They have their temples, their preaching, their initiating. But that worldwide preaching mission that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur envisaged, that didn't happen. Just in a small way, even in India they're preaching, but a few, anyway, in Prabhupada's words, I mean, that all they're doing is ringing bells and having picnic. So ringing bell means they're doing the deity worship, and they're having picnics, that is, having the prasad collectively. So that preaching was not happening. So from that, what do we learn? That in order to have an effective preaching mission, we need an institution. Individually, 25 of us may be there and doing our own things, nothing much will happen. But when these 25 individuals get together as an institution, as a collective body, then the result is going to be dynamic. Once I heard from somebody that Prabhupada said, I didn't hear it directly from Srila Prabhupada, but I heard it through one devotee, that Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, when we work together, then 1 is 1, 2 is 11, 3 is 111, 4 is 1. That is the effect of collective endeavor. And mind you, what Srila Prabhupada's one of the most important instructions before he left the planet was Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other to extend this mission. So, Gaudiama disintegrated because the institution collapsed. The institution and for the institution, okay, now with Prabhupada, we see that as he starts to preach, comes to America and gets an opportunity to preach, then what did Prabhupada do? The first thing he did, he wrote to his godbrothers, his prominent godbrothers, leading godbrothers there in India. These opportunities are available. Please come, let's work together to fulfill the dream of our Guru Maharaj. He wanted us to preach in the West. So opportunities now have come, some opportunities are there. Please come and let's work together. Prabhupada was ready at that time to even take insignificant role. He didn't want to become the leader. He invited them, come and lead. Let the mission go on. But they didn't come forward. Then Prabhupada had to start himself. And what did Prabhupada do? As soon as he started to get some response, he decided to establish an institution. 26 Second Avenue, small little storefront. Prabhupada establishes his institution, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. A 10 feet by 20 feet space storefront, but International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyway, they could, the lawyer who was registering the company or institution, he didn't mind this international aspect of it, but he had his concern about Krishna consciousness. So he expressed his concern. Swamiji, hardly anyone will understand what this Krishna consciousness is. Rather call it the International Society for God Consciousness. And Prabhupada's followers, those who are the witnesses there, some young Americans, they also thought that that's a good idea. But Prabhupada said, no, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I have come here to make everybody understand that Krishna is God. So that is the mission. I have come here to make everybody understand that Krishna is God. And that is the purpose of this movement. People think about God, people say they believe in God, but when you ask, who is God? Total blank. No idea at all, who is God? But Prabhupada came here to give us a clear understanding, who is God? Prabhupada himself said, if you want to know about God, you can come to me. I can tell you what he looks like, I can tell you what his name is, I can tell you what he does, I can tell you where he lives, I can even give you his telephone number. So that is how clearly and boldly Srila Prabhupada was giving us the understanding of the Supreme Personality of God. And in ISKCON, after ISKCON started to grow, then we see that Prabhupada was very emphatic about two things. One is the collective management through the concept of the GBC. He himself established that GBC concept, first appointing 11. And he, although he was the founder of that institution, he made himself one of the members of the governing body. In this way, he gave the importance to the governing body. That is one thing that we noticed that Prabhupada gave. And the other thing was his own position as the founder Acharya of ISKCON. Now, the other day I was actually mentioning, I'll repeat, I was a very new devotee at that time. I joined ISKCON quite late, but I had the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada during his last days. And last 10 months I was with Srila Prabhupada practically all the time. And so Srila Prabhupada was, in one hand I saw Srila Prabhupada was so humble. In Calcutta, there was a press conference, and one of the reporters was very eloquently glorifying Srila Prabhupada, saying that what he has done is greater than what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness only throughout India, but you have spread it all over the world. Prabhupada's immediate response was, no, I haven't done anything. Everything has been done by my Guru Maharaj and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They simply gave me the credit. So you can see how humble Srila Prabhupada was. You know, he would not take any recognition or credit for what he has achieved. An inconceivable achievement, but he didn't want to take any recognition and credit for that. But then Prabhupada was in Bombay, and one day a big newspaper article came out on the Juhu Temple. Juhu Temple was under construction at that time and almost complete. Very impressive marble temple. Many of you must have seen that also. And Tamalkrishna Maharaj was reading out the article to Srila Prabhupada. And then at the end, Prabhupada asked who was being interviewed by the reporter. Then they mentioned, Tamalkrishna Maharaj mentioned the name. Or maybe he asked and he found out who. And it was one sannyasi who was the project manager. He was actually head of the project. And Prabhupada asked to call him. And when he came, Prabhupada was so heavy, because there was no mention of Srila Prabhupada's name as the founder acharya in the entire article. And I mean, I was quite surprised. Like, in one hand, Prabhupada is so humble that he didn't want to take any credit for any of his achievements. And now Prabhupada is so particular, or rather so upset, that his name was not mentioned there as the founder acharya. And it took me a few years to understand why Prabhupada was so particular about that point. I recognized that there was a need for an institution to continue the mission that Srila Prabhupada started. Prabhupada knew that this mission will not be accomplished, cannot be accomplished, that is, in every town and village, cannot be accomplished in one lifetime. Especially when he started the movement at the age of 70, 71 to be precise. Like, what is the hope? So how to continue? So the continuation will take, for the sake of continuity, he needed the institution that would continue the mission. He came, set it up, and now it is going to be a collective endeavor to further the mission and spread it all over the world in every town and village. And for that we need an institution, a structured organization, and to hold that organization together, we need the head of the institution and a body, management body, to continue the management of the institution. Therefore, we needed Prabhupada's position to be established properly as the head of the institution. The head of the institution, head of the spiritual institution, obviously is going to be a spiritual identity. And that identity is the acharya of the institution. He is the founder, no doubt about that. No one will question that. But we have to establish properly that Srila Prabhupada is the spiritual head of the institution for all time. Here, of course, we run into a kind of a disagreement with the Ritviks. They say that they will... That's why sometimes when I make this presentation, they wonder whether I am speaking on behalf of the Ritviks. So, the thing is the difference... Actually, we have a lot of similarities. But there is one little difference. And that difference is that they say that Prabhupada will continue to give initiation, whereas we are saying that Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru of all the devotees of ISKCON for all time. And we have a resolution also in the GBC in that way. Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru of all the devotees of ISKCON. So Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru, the preeminent Shiksha Guru. This institution is based on Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Therefore, his books are the basis. And he is the Acharya. And those who are preaching and teaching in this institution, the basis for their teaching is Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada's teachings. That is going to be there all the time. So that is why we need these two things to be properly established. A collective concept of management and the head of the institution for all time. In that respect, we can draw an analogy. Like Christianity. Jesus Christ is the head of the Christian institution for all time. No one will ever be able to take over Jesus' position. And even though the Christians may have been divided into so many factions, but all of them accept Jesus as their spiritual head. Same thing with Muhammad in Islam. They are fighting, Shias are Sunni, fighting with the Sunnis. A terrible, vicious fight. But they both accept Muhammad as the... the head of the institution or head of the Islamic organization. Prabhupada even appreciated Ramakrishna Mission, although he had total disregard for what they speak. But their structure Prabhupada appreciated. Prabhupada even told us to research to find out what their structure is like. And he gave credit to Vivekananda for that, that he established Ramakrishna as the head of the institution. And because that institution still continues with Ramakrishna as the head, it is continuing in their own way. And today we can very, very optimistically say that ISKCON is continuing so successfully 37 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance because of these two concepts have been properly established and accepted in our institution. The movement is so effective because the collective concept of management of the GBC is going on, and Srila Prabhupada's position has been established, or the movement has recognized Srila Prabhupada as the founder Acharya, the spiritual head for this movement for all time. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Any question? And comment? Ravin Swarup Prabhu, yeah. Any comment? Okay, any questions?
Guru Maharaj, you started from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. Why after he departed his activities, 150 years, everything vanished, He is Krishna himself.
Yeah. Yeah, because he wanted to paint the achievements of these three stalwart acharyas, Bhaktivinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to paint it in black and white. Therefore, he created the black. So, his teachings practically disappeared. And then how it revived by Bhaktivinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. Yes, let me say.
In this regard, when you mentioned how the reputation of Gaudiya Vaishnavas and went low, in the early part of the 20th century, I think sometime in the 19-teens, there's a publication in England called Hastings Encyclopedia of Religion and Philosophy, I won't buy everything. I happened to look up and I looked up Chaitanya, and it's what it's very short entry said he introduced a degenerate element into Vaishnavism. That was the opinion at that time before Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
That's right, yeah. So, you see, okay, let's look at it the other way around. If everything was spreading from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu onwards, right, then the glory of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada couldn't have been there. Therefore, in order to make this movement firmly established on this planet, he made it first disappear, right? And then he revived it. And mind you, in the progress of that also we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Gaudiya mission fell apart. That also had some significance, because from their failure we learned. Even in ISKCON we made many, many mistakes after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. And those mistakes are actually the enlightening factor for us, that we learn what to do and what not to do, so that in future these mistakes cannot occur or affect our movement. We went through the Zonal Acharya system. That was a big possibility. Can you imagine if it happened 25 years after? Not 25, say 50 or 60 years after. No one would have been there to correct it. Right? But it was corrected. Like, ISKCON was going almost in a Gaudiya Math direction. Gaudiya Math appointed one acharya, we appointed 11 acharyas in ISKCON. And, you know, they were actually going on in a way like Prabhupada, and how the GBC body could have been affected and dismantled. These are very prominent leaders of ISKCON at that time. They were also GBC members. And above the GBC, they created an acharya board. And this acharya board was seen as something beyond the GBC. In 1980, it was going on like that until 1982. 1982, Rupanuga Prabhu, who was not one of the 11 acharyas, became the chairman of the GBC. They are going to have an acharya board meeting. They did not invite Rupanuga Prabhu, the chairman of the GBC, because he was not an acharya. So Rupanuga Prabhu resigned. He said that he is going to resign. Like, if as a chairman of the GBC, if he cannot participate in that meeting, then he is not going to continue as a GBC chairman. And that actually led to a massive discussion in the GBC party. And that is the time this acharya board was dismantled. So ISKCON had gone through all these difficulties, and the devotees at that time could deal with that. So this is how it is acting as a prophylactic, as a preventive measure. So now ISKCON is immune to that kind of danger. So that's what we have to understand. Whatever is happening is actually Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine arrangement to establish his institution for the effective propagation to fulfill his prediction that Krishna consciousness movement is going to spread in every town and village all over the world. Yes, Navin.
Maharaj, this concept of preeminent Shiksha Guru, I'm just trying to understand that more in general, and then I guess specifically I'm thinking, there's so many English translations now. I mean, you were talking before, you could not even find a copy of, you know, Chaitanya Bhaktivinoda Thakur, could not find. Now, the different acharya, so many Goswamis, there's kind of English translations of so many books. So, I mean, that's an example of how do we apply this preeminent Shiksha Guru kind of concept to reading these books. Should we read them, not read them, or how do we understand them?
In the early stage, Prabhupada did not want his disciples to read other books. He wanted them to stick to his books. Because that he knew that could confuse them. But then again, Prabhupada mentioned that when one becomes advanced, then he can read other books, when he is able to digest them. Another way to look at it is, you see, what did Prabhupada give? Did Prabhupada give anything different from what our previous acharyas gave? No. Prabhupada actually presented the previous acharyas' teachings, their teachings, in a way that is digestible to us. Digestible for us. After we have understood Prabhupada's teachings properly, then when we read the other acharyas, then we see that actually confirms our faith and understanding of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Yes, devotees are maturing, books are being translated, books are coming out, and devotees will be exposed to that. And mature devotees will gather information from there, which is going to further their conviction in Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And that will be my general response to that, you know. And another analogy came to my mind is something like that. Like, you go out, collect precious objects to decorate your home. Right? Your loyalty is to your home. And you're going out and collecting different gems and precious objects to decorate your home. Similarly, yes, ISKCON devotees will decorate their home, ISKCON, by collecting gems from other sources.
Thank you.
Yes, Bishop Vikashananda, and then Jadunath. Almost simultaneously, both the hands came up.
Jagannath Prabhu, do you want to ask a question first? It's okay to ask.
Well, he raised his hand afterwards.
Okay. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a very enlightening presentation. This entire presentation is a manifestation of your love and dedication to Srila Prabhupada. So it was one of my realizations I thought I would share with the group. I have a question. It's a two-part question. Part A of the question is, what was Srila Prabhupada's vision of ISKCON going forward? Obviously, we have the teachings of Mahaprabhu to spread the holy name in every town and village. But there was a vision, and we hear this and also see in some lectures and letters where Srila Prabhupada talked about establishing Varnashram. He thought he only did 50%, but there was another 50% left. So perhaps you can share some vision of Prabhupada, what he had, what he's going forward. That's part A. Part B is...
Okay, let me just go.
Sorry.
Well, you see, Prabhupada gave the process very simply. Preach and practice. Practice and preach. Right? And that is how this movement is going to grow. And that is how this movement is growing. devotees of ISKCON are following Srila Prabhupada's instructions and they are distributing that to others. So this is how this movement is going forward. About this Varnashram thing, I had some experience myself with Srila Prabhupada in that. You see, once in Vrindavan, you see, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan in 1977, he was quite unwell at that time. And we had to be with Srila Prabhupada. One of us had to be with Srila Prabhupada all the time. And even at night, and we had to be with him. My shift was from 12 to 2, 12 midnight to 2 o'clock in the morning. And many a night, Prabhupada couldn't sleep. And sometimes he would just talk. And so in one such night, Prabhupada was lamenting that there is so much to do and his health is so bad. But then I tried to console him by saying, Prabhupada, what you have done is inconceivable. You should not think that you haven't done enough. So now you should relax. Then Prabhupada said, no, what I have done is 50%. The other 50% is to establish Varnashram. And then Prabhupada said that not that everybody will become a devotee. Those who won't become devotees, for them we need Varnashram. And he explained that the society has to be structured according to the spiritual principle, according to the consideration of their varna, according to the modes of material nature, guna and karma. And then Prabhupada explained that he is establishing the brahminical, brahmanas. Sudras are already there. The whole world has become Sudra. And the Vaishyas are also there, although they are not performing properly. But what is lacking? The biggest challenge is the Kshatriyas. And that is the biggest challenge. Anyway, and later on, actually, I began to realize, pondering over that the worst enemy of Varnashram is democracy. Because democracy doesn't allow any room to the, any space to the Kshatriyas. In the democratic world, there is no room for the Kshatriyas. The semblance of the Kshatriyas we find in today's world in the mafias.
I was interviewing Prabhupada once for back on the anniversary of the United States. I was supposed to interview him about the American experiment. And I went, I went to the United States Information Service Library in Calcutta, and I reread the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. So I went to interview Prabhupada for Head Magazine. This was printed, and my first question was, has Krishna created the perfect form of government? And Prabhupada said, yes. Kshatriyas. That's what he said. So when he says we don't have Kshatriyas, that means government.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because in order to have the Kshatriyas, they have to have their own kingdom. Because the Kshatriyas don't function under others' domination. The Kshatriyas have their own And right, and democracy.
I was expecting something like, you know, some abstract thing like democracy or this or that. It wasn't this ism or that ism. It was kshatriyas.
Kshatriyas, yeah. Right. The government means, yeah. Thank you, Ramesh.
That's why it's hard.
That's why?
That's why Bharatiya government's hard.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Because when Prabhupada was in New York, the reporters asked him, why did you come to the West? And he said, I have come to give you a brain. Like you said, Iskandar is supposed to be the Brahman,
right,
the brains.
Right.
And then he said a little later on to the reporters, he said, actually, in your civilization, in your society, everyone is a Shudra, and there are a few Vaishyas.
Vaishyas, yeah, yeah.
You find out who owns everything, you'll find those few Vaishyas.
Vaishyas, yeah, true.
Trace the debt back to it, you know, everyone's in debt. Who has all the credit, you'll find them.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Thank you, Ramasur Prabhu. Yeah, what's your second question?
Thank you, Maharaj. Part B of that question is, so what can we do in terms of moving this mission forward? What kind of direction and guidance we can get from you?
Well, take Prabhupada's mission to heart. Commit yourself completely to that. Prabhupada himself sets such a wonderful example. Right? At the age of 26, he committed himself completely to the mission of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And see what he achieved. And, well, I mean, it's not that you have to leave your home and go away. Continue with your business. Prabhupada wanted to do that. He wanted to run his business. And he wanted to help his spiritual master's mission. So that's what every devotee in ISKCON, whether he's a brahmachari, sannyasi, grihastha, or vanaprastha, that's their mission. Somehow or other, let's help Srila Prabhupada's mission movement. And that will create such an incredible force that the whole world will become Krishna conscious. Jagannath?
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. You've several times stressed and reminded us that Prabhupada wanted cooperation. So, how would you assess the current state of cooperation, the current spirit of cooperation in ISKCON and the GBC?
Well, we are cooperating, and that's why ISKCON is together. ISKCON is expanding. It may not be the cooperation of the highest degree, but cooperation is there, and the GBC body is functioning with its effectivity. And as far as cooperation is concerned, like recently I actually wrote something to the ISKCON leadership discussion. Anyway, in that I mentioned about Prabhupada's idea of our cooperation in unity in diversity. So, recently a devotee asked me, what does it actually mean, the unity in diversity? So I gave the example of a football team. See, in a football team, some players are playing to stop the ball from entering the goal, and some others are aggressively pushing to push the ball to the opponent's goal. Two completely different roles they are playing. One is preventing the ball from entering, and the other is trying to push the ball through the thing. And actually, all the members are playing their respective role in the game. But their mission is one. So similarly, in ISKCON, every individual, you know, we have our diversity. As very eloquently Ravindra Swarup Prabhu put it yesterday, that unity without diversity will be monotonous, boring. And diversity without unity is going to be chaotic. So that's what we, diversity will be there. And we have to harmonize this diversity through the unity of a common goal. And in that, different individuals will play different roles. Like when one scores the goal, you know, everybody glorifies him, cheers him. But that doesn't mean the others will feel disheartened. Oh, look, he is getting all the credit. No, they should feel this goal is for our victory. So let's rejoice. So that is how we have to function with a spirit of unity of our mission, irrespective of our diversified individualities. Okay, last question. Okay, last two questions. Okay, last three questions.
I have a couple of questions that I want.
Just one.
So, Maharaj, this question is related to the discussion we had about democracy. Don't we get freedom from democracy, and because of that we are able to follow Krishna consciousness? Otherwise, you know, some countries where we cannot open ISKCON because they have other system of other form of government.
Well, I mean, democracy has its benefits, good sides. In simple words, I would say that democracy is better than the worst, but not the best system.
Hare Krishna. So, my question is, like, we hear that the PTC is the ultimate manager body for all of Islam. But I was thinking that when the question comes to like spiritual understanding of a particular topic from the Prabhupada, because they may have like different understanding of the same topic. So again, the ultimate authority will come back to the Jesus.
Yeah.
So that way, it is also the ultimate spiritual.
Yeah, sure. GBC is spiritual. Everything in ISKCON is spiritual. ISKCON is not a material organization. Like if somebody says that the GBCs are a bunch of materialistic managers, no, at least that's not how Srila Prabhupada seen that or created that. I mean, there's a room for improvement, no doubt about that. Sudhakar?
Guru Maharaj, many times I'm running to the train, you know, missing a train in 5 minutes, and then a beggar, I see him on the road begging for a dollar or two. Giving him a dollar is not solving his ultimate problem. Should I give him the dollar, or should I just pray to Krishna that, you know, do something for him, or should I, how do I deal with this situation?
Save it and give it for Krishna conscious purpose. Because Prabhupada didn't encourage us to give in charity like that to beggars. Like, you know, you may give him money, and with that money he'll eat meat and get drunk and drink. Or sometimes they'll even take intoxicants. Right? So why help him in that? Rather, you utilize your resources for the right cause. And donations, Prabhupada said, and Bhagavad Gita actually says, the donation given in a mode of goodness is for the benefit of the society, promoting Krishna consciousness.
Many times I face pious people, not God conscious, but you know, clean, they don't do drinking and eating on the vegetarian. Do you mind with that kind of people or?
Better still is carry some Krishna prasad and give it to them instead of giving money. That's what we do in India, you know, like whenever we stop in traffic lights, beggars come, and we give them Krishna prasad, they're happy. So when you give them money, you don't know how they're going to utilize it, rightly or wrongly. If they utilize it wrongly, then you are going to get the karmic reaction for that also, for help assisting him. Therefore, make it a point that your donation is used for the right cause so that you derive the benefit from that. Okay? But if somebody renders some service to you, then you can pay him. That is different. Like, if somebody does something for you, you give him. You can give him even some tips also. Okay, it's already past 12:30. Thank you all very much. All glory. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaur Premanande His Grace Ravindra Sarup Prabhu Ki Our Grace Mother Sudamani Ki All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande Hari.